Amen. Well, good morning. So we are carrying on with our 10-10 vision series. What does it mean? How do we live life in all its fullness, which Jesus talks about? This isn't something we just believe in that kicks in when we die. This is something about living life in all its fullness now, bringing heaven here now, reconciled relationships with God, with ourselves, with each other, with creation. Now. And so this morning we've been working through, as part of this series, the Ten Commandments. So we'll see if this runs or not. That's not working. So I might need a bit of help, Dan. You're about to get really busy because we've got a lot of slides and I've got a clicker that doesn't work. Work with me, Dan. Oh, there we go. What we believe is this morning's talk. We're looking at what we believe, because we are looking at the next command, which is don't lie, the ninth of the commands. And to start us off on this, we're gonna I'm gonna tell you a story about Hillary Clinton. In 2008, she was running her campaign for election, and she stood in Washington, and she was trying to prove, I think, her experience in politics and in diplomacy. And she was telling this story of this time in 1998 when she was flying into Bosnia. She was making a visit as First Lady, I think, into Bosnia. And the story that she said was, you know, when I went into Bosnia and there was supposed to be this reception, but there was sniper fire and this reception on the tarmac didn't happen. We had to all rush undercover into the hangar because there was all this like sniper fire coming from the hills. Very dramatic story, which really proves quite how experienced she is in world politics and diplomacy. And she's like been there at the rough end. The only problem is there was a whole bunch of journalists there who were in Bosnia in 1998, they're going, that is not how that happens. Because she flew in and there was a beautiful reception. I think we've got a picture of it here. Beautiful reception on the tarmac. There was a little 9-year-old girl there who read a poem and commented on how safe the country was now because of what President Bill Clinton had done. Hillary Clinton's own daughter was with her, Chelsea Clinton. No running to the hangar, no sniper fire coming in. And so she was asked about this a week or so later, going, well, you said this happened, but actually none of that happened. And she did clarify that she misspoke. So it's all right. Lying's fine as long as we misspeak. But the thing is, she's an experienced politician, right? There's no way she thought she could get away with that. I actually think that what's happened is over that 12-year period, she's told that story. And maybe like when she was flying in, they were going, if there's sniper fire from the hills, we might have to abandon the welcome or whatever. Or maybe they said, oh, there is some sniper fire in the hills, we're going to be careful. Or maybe they took a slightly different route in, or maybe they just, it came up in a security briefing or something happened which in her mind became this is quite dangerous. And then as she's told the story, it's moved from there could have been sniper fire to there was sniper fire. And this story develops in her, as she tells it, and it just enhances a little bit of time until she's running for cover into a hangar with her daughter and everyone's rushing her in, there's military everywhere. Maybe she started believing her own lie. Maybe she's told that story and embellished that story so many times that she's forgotten what the truth was. So then she stood in Washington making a speech in 2008, and now she believes she's telling the true story of something that really happened. Pretty terrifying, but that has happened to me too. Back about 30 years ago, I worked for a restaurant in Manchester, and Muhammad Ali was one of the owners of the restaurant, so he came over for the opening. It was quite a big deal. It was quite a big media deal. This was in his like Parkinson's stage. He was quite sick. He had people guiding him. He couldn't really see very well. He was like shuffling along, and then if it was steps, he had to go to him. Hey, Mo, there's a step. just in front of you, and they like hold his leg as he stepped down a little bit. I do on these steps sometimes. Someone just helping you down, and like he was not very able bodied until, as he was leaving, the whole mass of people was leaving the restaurant towards the end. He was walking through the restaurant, and then one of his bodyguards was like, "Oh, do you want to spar?" And he had a little boxing sparring match, him and one of his minders. And this shuffling, infirm, old legend was suddenly up on his toes, and the jabs were flying out really powerfully. And it was like, oh my word, what happened? It must be like muscle memory. He's done it so many times, that's the thing he can still remember. He can still remember how to be on his toes. He can still remember how to jab. And then as soon as it finished, like, he's back and he's shuffling again. It was like, that was incredible. And I was quite close to this. And so I saw this quite close at hand. And, you know, like, it was right in front of me. But as I told the story over the years, I remember, it must have been, I don't know, 15 years later or something, or 20 years later, I was telling this story. And by this point, the story was, I was shadow boxing Muhammad Ali. And he nearly hit me, and it was really scary. I'm going, and then I had this like little just like dissonance inside me going, did I? Did I or didn't I? Did that happen or did that not happen? And I reflected on it, and I was like, oh, no, I was just, like, right there. I wasn't up on my toes jabbing. Like, I was close. But this, and what I'd done over the years was kind of just embellish the story a little bit, just a little bit every time. To the point that I, like, had this, like, wait a minute. I've just told this story, and I'm not convinced that's exactly how it went. And it wasn't exactly how it went. We can tell these lies. And, you know, do not lie. Like, really? Like, were there just 9 commandments and God felt like 10 was a better number, so he threw do not lie in? Is that what happened? Because it's like, really? Like, yeah, do not murder, I get that. Do not commit adultery, sure. Do not steal, all right. Yeah, those all make sense to me. Those are really damaging things, but we all lie a little bit, right? We all tell white lies. We all embellish things now and again. We all lie a bit. Right? Just to protect ourselves or cover ourselves. Really? Eternal suffering, damnation. Because I embellished a story or I denied something to my parents because I didn't want to get in trouble. Like, really? This tormented me for many years as a child. Like, the other ones I'm clear on, haven't murdered anyone for a while. Like, I am good. Not since I became a Christian anyway. So, like, I'm there at like 12 years old going, oh man, but lying. How am I going to get through the rest of my life without a little lie here and there? You see, lies, it's not that big a deal, right? It's just not that big a deal. But, see if this goes again. Well, I think we've gone one. So, lying is a... No, we've gone on a couple of two there, sorry. Lying is a problem because it damages us. I used to say to our children when we raised them, like, you know, if you've done something wrong, like, own the thing you've done wrong. And if we talk to you about it, tell us the truth. If you lie to us about something, even if you think the thing that you're lying to us about is really bad, lying is worse. Because then we can't trust you. And it's really important we can trust you. And that when you say something, we know where you're at. You see, sin, do you remember, sin is a relational problem rather than a legal problem. These aren't rules that we have to follow. This is all about how we relate. This is all about the disconnection between us. So when we lie, we do damage. We break trust. So sin is about relational dysfunction. So sin is all the ways in which we're disconnected. Like we're disconnected relationally from God. We're disconnected within ourselves. We're disconnected from each other, in our relationships with each other. And we're disconnected from creation. This great disconnection is the sin problem we have. It's not that we broke some rules. It's that we have a relational issue. We are disconnected from God, from ourselves, with each other, and from creation. You see, lies break trust. And so they perpetuate that disconnection between us. If our role as followers of Jesus, if our role is to overcome sin, is to be reconciled and reconnected, lies take us in the other way. Lies break trust. I've lost. They damage relationships. They build walls between us. They distort our friendships. And then we see a whole social breakdown of trust all around us now with fake news and all sorts of things going on. Like, how do we know what to believe? How do we know who to believe? And then we can feel really isolated and disconnected. Then we can feel really distrusting of everybody. And we can feel quite a lot of dissonance in our lives because the things don't add up. So they also damage people. If I lie to you, I do damage to you. If I tell you something that's not true, I distort your understanding of reality, your perception of reality. I change your worldview, maybe. I might even distort your beliefs. Some of the things I might say to you, if I'm critical to you, if I'm calling you names, if I'm telling you things that I don't like about you, whatever, I can really distort your self-image. If I say things to you about you that are at odds with what God says about you, that you're loved and you're lovable and you're included, that you're precious, that you carry the divine spark. But if I say, no, I think you're ugly, I think you're stupid, I am distorting your self-image and God's image of you and in you. And if I lie, which is, we do that, it's far more often we will gossip about other people than we will lie directly to somebody's face. So we might gossip about people, and then I'm distorting your opinion, your view of somebody else, if I'm engaging in gossip. It's so destructive. And as we've heard, lies distort me. Because if I tell a lie often enough, I start believing my own lies. Because I might lose touch with reality myself. I know a man who lied so often that actually he ended up getting ensnared entirely in his own lies. Lost all connection with reality, would argue the most ridiculous points as being true, just to save face. Even if he knew that he was wrong about something, he would still argue because he couldn't deal with being seen as wrong. The lies which he told everybody eventually caught up with him, and he lost touch with reality and actually became quite mentally impaired by it. Lying becomes a habit and we lose connection with reality. It creates a dissonance in us where the things that we actually see as real can actually be at odds with reality itself. Our worldview can be at odds with the evidence that is in front of us, and we feel a real dissonance and a disconnect within ourselves, and we can fight really hard to defend our illusion. It does damage to us. So it's fascinating, isn't it, when Jesus comes along and says, I am the way, I am the truth, and I am the life. Seems like Jesus saying that he is the truth might have something to say about the command that says, do not lie, right? The problem with this is, I think very often when we think about Jesus saying, I am the way, the truth, and the life, What we can end up doing with that is we can go, well, therefore, if Jesus is the way, then that's the right things to do. And we do the right things. And if Jesus is the truth, well, then that's believing the right things. And if Jesus is about life, well, that's really life when we get to heaven. And we need to go to heaven when we die. And we can turn this statement that is all about life and fullness and beauty and the reality of all things and living life in all its fullness now, which is what this series is about, we can turn that into something that is about religiosity, legalism, and death. These profound words of Jesus, we can distort them into something that is all about legalism, religiosity, and death, rather than life in all its fullness, rather than the reality of all things. You see, can we make it about a story that happened in the past? See, when we talk about Jesus being the truth, I think very often what we might understand is, well, it's the things about Jesus that are true, that he was God, that he died on the cross, that he was born of a virgin, that he rose again on the third day, that like there's all these things about that we go, well, yeah, I believe all the theology. But I don't think that's what Jesus is talking about at all. I mean, partly because a whole bunch of that stuff hadn't even happened at that point. So I don't think that's what he's talking about. I think what he's saying is the reality of everything is found in me. The truth of everything is found in me. The writer of Colossians tries to get this when he says that all things are held in him. Everything is from him and through him and to him. All the atoms are held together in him. He is the head of everything. He is the inspiration. He is the voice that speaks everything into being. Everything is from him. The reality of all things are found in Jesus. I think this is the claim Jesus is making. It's quite a radical claim. I remember... It's no secret, I think, to many people in the room that you two largely discipled me through my teens and 20s. And I remember going to see, in 1991, we went to see the Acton Baby Zoo TV tour. Sorry, Zoo TV. We did the indoor arena, then we did the outdoor arena, and I went to it a few times on each one. And quite near the beginning of this, they did the song called The Fly, and there were all these statements, like hundreds and hundreds of statements of words just flashing through on the screens, and then it paused on this image, and right in front of me there were all these huge screens saying everything you know is wrong. And I spent a little bit of while going, well, I mean, obviously not as a Christian, everyone else obviously everything they know is wrong, but not as a Christian. And then this legend started going around that you two had shown up at Greenbelt and going, oh no, everything you know is right. I don't think that really happened. So because this was a jarring statement for me. And it got me asking questions of going, oh, so what are all the things that I believe that actually don't hold up? What is the reality of everything? What are the things I've inherited? What are the things that have been spoken over me? What are the things that are the systems in society that kind of distort and inform my worldview? What's the story that I'm living in that has been influenced by my parents and my culture and my society and my education and my whatever else it might be? And what of my story is wrong? How do I understand what truth is? And the answer is Jesus. You see, one of the understandings that I came to as I was reflecting on this statement and over the subsequent years, see, I'd grown up with this idea that everybody was willfully disobeying God. People kind of knew what they were supposed to do, but they were willfully disobeying God. People were trying to screw up their lives. People were going, God, I'm not going to do what God says. I'm going to do what I want. And I know it's going to be really destructive. And I know I'm going to be a mess. And I know it's going to cost me everything I've got. And I know, but I'm not doing what God says because there's this thing within me that has to willfully rebel against God. And I was like, no, you know what? I don't think that's true. I met a lot of people who didn't necessarily follow the teachings of Jesus, but almost without exception, everyone's trying to make good decisions. Everyone's trying to make decisions that make sense of their life and move them forward. Generally, the problem is our data's off. The information we're working with. You see, when we're making a decision, we gather all the information that we have at our disposal, and then we try and make the best decision. If you're buying a house, you get surveys and you get as much information as you can. Is this the right house? Does it have the right number of bedrooms, the right number of bathrooms? What about the size rooms? What about the people can spend a lot of time looking at this stuff online. I'm telling you, like, Rachel spends hours looking at houses online. Like, oh, what about this one? What about this one? What about this one? Like, we do the research, right? We get our information and then we make the best decision that we can. And we do actually that with pretty much everything in our lives. I think we're working on the information that we have, the data that we have, and we make the best decision we think we can make. The problem is our data's off. Do you remember talking about the story that we live in is a story that we live out? The story that we live in defines our behavior. If you want to know what someone believes, don't listen to what they say they believe. Watch how they behave. If you want to know what's important to somebody, what they really value in life, look at their bank account and see what they spend money on. Don't listen to what they say is important. See how they behave. Because our behavior is what reveals what we truly believe. You see, we all live in a story. The problem is, if our story is distorted, then our behavior is distorted. If our story is distorted, we make bad choices based on the bad data that we have, based on the bad story that we live in. So, let me give you an example. If I have been raised and my story is, the stuff that's been spoken over me in my life is, you're not very good, so if you're not very attractive, you're not very beautiful, you're unlovable. If this is the message I've received countless times in my life, I believe that. I start to believe that, and then I start to make decisions based on that. So what happens if I get an opportunity of some love or affection or attention from somebody? The likelihood is I'll take it. Even if I kind of have an instinct that this isn't going to work out well, even if I kind of have an instinct that this person isn't entirely the person they're making out to be, if I think that for a moment, even if for a day, I can feel like I am attractive, I am desirable, I am lovable, I might well take it because I'm working on bad data. If I feel like I'm weak, powerless, and someone offers me a moment to impose myself, maybe joining in some violence, I might well take it because my story is that you're weak and you're powerless. And if someone's allowing me to be powerful even for a moment or a day, then I might take it. Even though it's a bad decision, because I'm working on a bad story, I'm working on bad data. If I feel that I'm unimportant and no one listens to what I say, and then I get a piece of gossip, which I know people are going to be interested in, I can be really popular for at least a day with this gossip. I'm probably going to start sharing the gossip because it feeds something in me that makes me feel important, makes me feel like people want to hear what I've got to say, makes me feel like I've got something to say. Do you see how that works? You see, if our story is distorted, then our behaviors are distorted. And we start making choices that impact our lives, and our lives become distorted. And they just perpetuate this cycle of damaging stories. Well, this is another relationship that failed. Another time I got into trouble just for doing something that I see everyone else doing and not getting into trouble for. Another moment when I express myself, when I exert myself, and they see no one really is interested in what I have to say. Everyone really does think that I'm weak. You see, our lives become distorted and we end up distorting others because we project our story onto other people and we tell our story onto other people, and our behaviors can become really damaging behaviors that don't just damage us but damage other people. Our stories are distorted. And so when we see Jesus inviting us into restored relationship, a God who invites us to be known, a God who reveals love, a God who, Jesus talks about God and says, this is the Father who runs the distance to his child and doesn't even let him get his apology out before he embraces him and puts a ring on his finger and the shoes on his feet and the robe on his shoulders and throws a party. This is a God. You see, do you remember talking about a few months ago now about how the origin of sin isn't the rules, the origin of sin is broken relationship? Because if the sin comes into the world when Adam and Eve ate the apple, well, then it broke a rule, so we have a legal problem. But if sin came into the world when they believed the lie about who God is, when the snake said, you know, he's not trustworthy, he's holding out on you, he's just trying to trick you, he's scared of you, he's trying to keep you down. If they believed the lie about God, well, now we have a relational problem. And throughout history, we have projected our lies, our fear, our judgmentalism, our violence onto God when it's really our broken, distorted stories that we're projecting onto him. But Jesus comes and shows us who God really is. Jesus comes and corrects our distorted view of who God is. And then Jesus helps us understand and corrects our distorted views of who we are. And when we understand who we are created to be, then we understand who each other is created to be. Because now I'm not in competition with you anymore. Now I get to see you as image bearer of God. You see, when we understand who we're created to be by this God who is love, this God who is grace, this God who is forgiveness, this God who is so long-suffering for us, this God is so faithful. When we understand that this is who God is, then we get to see ourselves as God created us to be, and it corrects our story. We see ourselves as accepted and included. We see ourselves as beautiful because that's who God says you are. Of immense worth. Someone who carries the image of God, the DNA of God, the divine spark within us. We're created that way. Someone who's created to bless and love and heal and restore. Not someone who's created to consume and take and destroy, but someone who's created to be a conduit of God's blessing into all creation. So we can bless and create and restore. Someone who is created to speak life into the world around them. And when we understand that of ourselves, then we are free to understand that of each other too. That our neighbor, our enemy, our family members, our school friends, our work colleagues, however problematic they might be, are accepted and included and beautiful. They are of immense worth, and someone who carries that divine spark, that DNA of God. They are someone who's created to bless and love and heal and restore. And they are someone who is created to speak life into the world all around them. They are a partner in Christ. They are a brother, a sister. However difficult they might be, they are a gift to be explored. We are family together. You see, lies distort us. And they don't just distort us, they distort each other. And they, because they disrupt and they distort our stories of what is true. And Jesus says that he is truth. So we must align ourselves with him. The invitation is to align ourselves with the reality of all things, is to align ourselves with Jesus, who is all truth. The invitation is to correct the bad data by aligning ourselves with Jesus in relationship so that we can see the reality of all things, so that when we're gathering data on which to make a decision, that story, that data, that information is coming from reality himself, from truth himself. So aligning ourselves with Jesus is a journey. It's not just something that happens in a moment. Well, I gave my life to Jesus when I was 24 or whatever, so no, it's a journey of discipleship, of footprints converging as we get closer and closer. It takes a lifetime, and it's new every day. We aren't aligning ourselves with something static. We're not aligning ourselves with something that is just theology or legalism or religiosity. We are aligning ourselves with someone dynamic, personal, and expansive. Someone who changes every day. And I know that might be problematic because we go, something those go, wait a minute, God's unchangeable. What do you mean he changes every day? God is unchangeable. And yet, he has the grace and the accommodation to interact with me uniquely every day because he consistently meets us right where we are and invites us into the next steps forward. So he changes how he relates to us for what is best for us, whilst remaining unchanging. Because that's what relationship demands. Theology demands unchanging. Relationship demands personal, unique interaction that is new every morning. Can we have the musicians up? Lies matter, not because we're breaking a rule, but because we're damaging relationships when we lie. When we lie, I damage myself, I damage you, I damage the people I'm lying about, I damage my story, I damage your story, and the story we live in is the story we live out. So let's live out better stories. Let's be people who tell a better story that is crafted and directed and consumed by Jesus, who is the reality of all things. Let's be people who are entirely filled by the Spirit, aligned with him and his kingdom. And speakers of truth and reality into every situation. Amen.